Welcome back to Owls Only, the Adult Swim podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Hope, and this podcast is about all the great content you can find on HBO Max. And I have a very special guest with me. He is the creator of the show we are talking about. It's Jason Rees.
Hello.
So,
nice to meet
Jason,
you.
What's your history with Adult Swim?
My history with Adult Swim, do you like as a fan or as a participant?
Oh, it's both. Definitely as both. Well,
what's interesting? I was actually thinking about this last night because I knew like there was going to be a part of this interview that was like going to be like, what are your favorite Adult Swim shows? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, like my favorite Adult Swim shows are all like the live action ones. My favorite is Delocated.
I love Delocated.
Delocated was so good. I watched every episode as it aired. I followed it. I loved it. That, and I just think John Glazer is the funniest man in the world. Like, period.
Yeah, absolutely.
Eagle Heart, Children's Hospital, that sort of era is like how I became a fan of Adult Swim. Tim and Eric, of course.
Yeah.
During the time that, I'm gonna put my foot in my mouth because I don't know politically like what everything's in such disarray right now. It's hard to kind of navigate the battle lines. But Mike Lazo and Walter Newman, Justin Roiland introduced us like very early on, back when Rick and Morty was kind of like, I want to say in like its second season or something.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Mike Lazo was very like, I really admired him as well as I did Walter Newman. But like I was on my thing of like wanting to make a show that they didn't necessarily want at that time.
Yeah.
And that show was like a hyper serialized, almost like Breaking Bad, animated Breaking Bad kind of idea. That's like a vague description, but
was it still comedy?
Yeah. It was going to be like a dark comedy, kind of not dissimilar from Royal Crackers in terms of tone, I guess.
Yeah.
But like, we just weren't on the same page. And like, in terms of like creatively what I wanted out of life at that moment. And
yeah.
And it was very kind of like, I loved them though. I thought they knew what they were doing and it was clear, but there's just, you know, we were on two separate pages. Eventually, I hit a certain point years later where like I was like, you know what, I'm gonna try again with those guys and I want to do something episodic like they want. Mm-hmm. Now come to find out, like, I'm not sure that's even a stigma they have anymore about serialization, like at the time that we pitched Royal Crackers. But like that was the impetus for me to be like, okay, I want to do something episodic and like can just, you know, I want to tell jokes, I don't need to make like a grand Emmy winning statement of like a show, or you know what I mean? Like, I just,
yeah, absolutely.
I was down to just have fun and
we
make
do
a show.
Still kind of do that within Royal Crackers, especially in a lot of the second season.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It ended up just becoming that, but, sorry, I'm rambling. So yeah. So like, yeah, it was just, I came back to them. Seth Cohen and I decided to pitch there first. And the second they said, yes, we didn't even like the thing you're supposed to do is like pitch it all over town. And then you mm-hmm. get like people bidding and blah, blah, blah. But we pitched Royal Crackers and they said like, yeah, we're interested. We were like, let's go. Like that's where we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are. So
did you pitch it to Lazo or was this after Lazo already left the company?
So Lazo was not, you know, you heard whispers that he was there, but not, you heard kind of conflicting information about that.
Yeah.
Walter Newman picked up the show.
Okay.
He was Lazo's understudy, and it shows. A
Yeah.
really smart, awesome guy.
For sure.
And he was the champion that said, like, yeah, let's do this. You know, like Walter and I had a pre-existing relationship from that previous meeting that I just mentioned, and he was down. So he was the guy who got the show going.
Okay, awesome.
There might have been some, like, Lazo might have been overseeing from the shadows. I don't know. Like, I
Yeah.
kind of heard whispers that he might, but I truly don't. It would all be speculation if
Yeah,
I
I got
weighed on
you.
that.
Yeah, because after Lazo left, it did seem to be kind of like a shift at the network. They were looking for a lot more like 22-minute shows, and I feel like you guys came in at the exact perfect time to like hit that exact thing they were looking for, which is like 22-minute like animated stuff. And I know that a lot of people, like a lot of like older Adult Swim fans, have kind of bristled at the 22-minute like runtime of the newer stuff. But I think shows like this and like Teenage Euthanasia have really like taken that sort of format of like the 22-minute sitcom and added so much like Adult Swimness to it. Like I think specifically, I love the premiere episode where they're on the news and Steve is just like breathing into the microphone for like 2 minutes straight. I remember watching that and I was like, I was expecting it to end and it just did not end. It did feel almost kind of like Space Ghostian, like that old like Adult
Great.
Swim style humor, you
Yeah.
know?
Love it. Yeah, that's great. And that is the ambition behind it, you know. I was worried when, we kind of started to move forward with Adult Swim that, like, I was not a good match for them. I come from a very, in terms of my animation education or my field of knowledge, it's like, I was a Family Guy kind of like changed my life. Like, that was the thing that I was like, oh, that's what I want to do for a living. That was like the roadmap for me. And then I went on to work at Fox and do my own animated show for them that just became a complete disaster.
Became another Batgirl.
What's that?
Like became Batgirl, just like
Yeah,
never got to see the light of day.
I'm the OG of Batgirl, tax write-off. Like, that was I was there before anybody. I was a
Yeah.
victim of that, one of the first victims of that, for sure. For better or worse, I mean, listen, I didn't want to work on that show anymore. If it had gotten picked up for another season or whatever, like, had it been successful, I don't know that I would have continued to do that show. But I'm sorry, I feel like I walked away from your question.
No, you're good. And we were just talking about like I think it was something about like whether or not you wanted to work, like how you felt working with like Adult Swim.
Just that I wasn't a match for them. Like, I just
Yeah.
felt like very kind of like Fox broadcast guy. Like, I just felt like I was a very kind of general audience kind of guy, while,
Yeah.
the stuff they were doing was much more kind of, for lack of a better word, alternative and alti. And it turned out like, no, we were actually a pretty good match, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know, like, I have my own kind of like speculative hypotheses of why we were so ill received, and it's just what a lot of people, I think, don't know is that, like, that style that Royal Crackers has,
Yeah.
I went and made a show for Fox that had a similar style in 2013, 2012, whatever.
Yeah.
And at that time, I guarantee you, if Royal Crackers, like, dropped at that time, or that whatever, a show with that style dropped, everybody would have been like, okay, great, like, open to it.
Yeah.
But in the time since then, in the 10 years that I've been kind of MIA and maybe not developing as much as I should have, maybe I could have kept up with the times a little bit better. That style is designed for one Flash animator to be able to do it by
Yeah.
themselves. Like, that's what it's built to do.
Yeah.
So it's just been capitalized and bastardized, not by Adult Swim, by every other network around. And
Yeah.
they have just been pumping out these shows with the wrong sort of formulaic thinking behind them.
Yeah.
And when Royal Crackers was kind of announced, it for the Adult Swim fans looked like A, they're falling into the same traps as those other networks. Mm-hmm. And B, just the sheer frustration of just like, great, another one of these, you know? Yeah.
But also, I think that people say that about almost every single adult animated show ever, because sure. I'm someone who, like, as you can see on like the wall behind me, you see all like my fucking like Venture Brothers and Simpsons figures. Like, yeah. I'm someone who has like an unhealthy obsession with adult animation, and I tend to watch like definitely everything from Adult Swim, most stuff from like Max, and like a decent amount of like stuff from Hulu. And so every single time there's a new show announced, people just like immediately jump to hate it, and it's like, you're like, if they announced King of the Hill today, people would be like, this looks like shit. And it's like, no, you love King of the Hill. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, nobody gives these like new adult animated shows a chance. I think Fox has announced another one like yesterday, like mm-hmm. something, I don't remember what the name of it is called, but it's like, it's coming out this fall, I think. Mm-hmm. And people were just like shitting on it all over Twitter. And it's just like, I mean, it wasn't the best trailer, but like, give it a fucking shot. Like,
yeah.
It's just unfortunate with it happens across like everywhere. I'm gonna piss off a lot of people listening to this podcast, but I've seen every episode of Velma on HBO Max. I think that show's actually pretty good. I think it's solid. I think it's funny, you know?
Okay.
Like,
I haven't watched it at all.
I think there is it has a great cast, like Dennis from Always Sunny is Fred. Like, that's enough to make me watch it. But like, it's like this like fever people get where it's like, so enough people say that this thing sucks and it immediately becomes like law in their mind. And it's like, no, just give it a chance. Like, watch it and like make your own decisions. But
that's been very, by the way, like very kind of heartwarming to me, and kind of like the most positive thing that I have experienced through this like cesspit of the internet, like people reaching out to me. And I'm not, I sound very Trumpy right now, like I'm selling myself or something like that, but I swear to God, it's true.
Yeah.
Like, people have been reaching out to me and saying like, I am so sorry. Like, I thought your show was this and didn't give it a chance. I admit you're wrong. And I go like, and I respond with like, hey man, like, I would be a hypocrite if I faulted anybody for jumping to a conclusion off of like minimal information. Yeah. I remember when The American Office was announced, and I was such a fan of the BBC one that I was just like, fuck you guys. Like, I'm going to hate this fucking show. And yeah. I tried to hate it, like, which is really gross. Like, that's really gross attitude to have. Obviously, it became an undeniable, hilarious, whatever, you know, the thing that it is. And it was undeniable. But you know, it's like, I have been victim of that mentality. My thing, the silver lining that I have seen is people willing to get out of their pride and sidestep that and go like, no, you know what? Actually, I was wrong about this show. It's actually pretty good, you know?
I remember, I think you guys did a 3-episode premiere when the show came out. Was it 3-episode or 2-episode? I think it might have been 3 episodes.
3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember the first thing that made me fall in love with the show was just the term Burger Boy Shit Blizzard. Like, after that, I was like, you got me. And then the second episode, where it was like Deb and Steve take like the CBD gummies and start like freaking out, then I was like, I feel like I got the show. And I was like, I sold. Like, I love it. As soon as that episode got to that episode, I loved it.
I love the first season. It seems like people didn't speaking about people very generally, and I don't mean to discount the people that were there all along that rooting for us, but like, it seems like there was a big turnaround in season two. But you know, I'm like, season one is like, I'm really proud of that season, and like, I really you know, obviously every show has its growing pains, and you know, it you learn where your strengths and weaknesses are and all that, but like, like I'll tell you the one thing I was gonna say about that too, by the way, is like, one thing I'm not sure, I don't know if it was a good or bad move. It's kind of, I don't know if this will be interesting to anybody, but it was that 3-episode premiere was the pilot, Tio's comeback tour, and then Factory 37. Mm-hmm. And it was originally in the original lineup going to be Pilot, Steeb, and then Factory 37. Mm-hmm. And the reason we did that flip was because the Pilot and Steeb kind of have both have this social media aspect to their storylines.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, are we going to be misleading people into thinking like which would not be good if they thought that, oh, this is a show about like grappling with social media. And it's like, no. Like, let's stay away from that. So we switched out that one for Theo's comeback tour, which is a little bit more kind of human and visceral, I think.
Yeah. That's the one with Gilbert Gottfried in it, right? Theo's comeback tour. Yeah, because I remember after he died, he just like kept showing up in animated stuff. And that was like one of the last ones he was in. I remember like watching this, my friends were like, how many, like, is Gilbert Gottfried still alive? Has this been like an elaborate joke that he's been playing?
I can give a pretty good educated timeline on that, which is like, I think Smiling Friends got him first. I think we were second to last, and I know he did voices on my buddy Brian Weisel's project.
Pony Show.
Right? After Royal Crackers. I think that's the timeline. And then he passed away soon after that. Yeah.
Because I saw I was at New York Comic Con and I saw the first like half of Pony Show, I think. And I was like, oh shit, it's Gilbert Gottfried.
Again,
But
I'm surprised no conspiracy theories like started popping up, like,
because he's in hiding, keep on showing up and stuff. So a huge part of this show is something super specific, is all like the nu metal stuff. I'm wearing my Taint hoodie here. So were you like super into nu metal in the early 2000s? Like, what bands are you into, and like what bands kind of inspired like all the Taint stuff?
So I was like in 7th, 8th grade when I was like really into all the shit that was on MTV, like Korn, Limp Bizkit, Slipknot was a big one, all those bands, like you System of a Down, of course. I had that first System of a Down album, and like was one of the first kids in school to buy it and hear and get have them on my radar, and I felt so cool for that. And then when I rounded high school, I more got into punk and kind of immersed myself in like just nothing but punk culture. Mm-hmm. So it was a very short-lived era of my life where I was really into nu metal. I think Theo originally, like, something that keeps fucking haunting me, keeps haunting the internet or like whatever, what I Google, is like the original image of Theo with like the Hurley shirt, the Blink-182 shirt. It's like, I was originally going to make him like a Mark Hoppus, like pop, like, you know, old pop punk kind of guy. But every time I said it like out loud, like, yeah, he's going to be pop punk. Like, it just, I could see people's faces go like it felt just too oddly, like, there's nothing more specific than nu metal, but it weirdly, pop punk weirdly felt specific and unspecific at the same time.
Yeah.
It just, it wasn't as funny as such a niche thing as like nu metal.
Yeah.
That's my history with nu metal, is like recounting that time and falling in love with it for the nostalgic memories it gave me, and pumping a show full of it, you know, and somebody really dying on that hill really made me laugh. Like, the thought of just like, I'm all about this, and only about 100 other people are too.
Well, fake bands have been like a huge thing for Adult Swim. Like, of course, like Death Clock is like a huge thing. Would you ever do like a Taint show or like a Taint live show?
100%. I mean, like, I don't know who would be involved. Like, Santino turns out to be a very good singer. He can sing. He would tell you that he can't. He can.
Yeah.
Because he's a humble person. But that guy can definitely pull it off.
Yeah.
You know, and then Mark M, Sick Animation Mark, who's one of our writers on the show, writes the lyrics, and our composer Frank writes the music for Tane. So I would be down to watch those three, you know, put something together 100%, you know, like I can't, I feel like I'm a pretty good, I have a pretty good ear for music, but I don't know one thing about making it at all.
Yeah. I fielded questions in like one of my Discord servers, for this interview, and like so many people were like, ask about a Tane album, ask about like a Tane live show.
I'd love like, to. I would absolutely be down.
It's there. So speaking of this Tane hoodie, by the way, I have an amazing story about this that I want to put on this podcast. So I have gotten one press kit by myself. I write for Swimpedia. So I've seen like screeners and stuff like that. A lot of the stuff that I do goes through Swimpedia, but I have got one press kit for myself. It is the Royal Crackers one. And obviously you saw the video of me doing the Royal Crackers challenge, like right after the first episode came out.
Yep.
Because I got that press kit, which comes with like the box, the crackers, and the Tane t-shirt. And I was still living with my parents at this time. It's like a year ago. And my mom like texted me when I was at work and said, hey, you got a package. It said like Royal Crackers. And I was like, first time I had gotten anything from Adult Swim, like official recognition, like, hey,
that's so cool, man.
You can put this, like, you mean enough for us to send you this thing. So I was like losing my shit. And so like a month later, I think it was like, a month later, my mom just like hands me like an Amazon package, and it's like, hey, I had some extra like Amazon money, so I got this for you. And it's this hoodie, and I'm like wearing it. And then my dad starts looking at us, and he's like laughing, and she's like, what? She had absolutely no idea what the word Tane means. And she just like,
it's a word. It's an English word. Like,
yeah. You know? Yeah. And she just like bought me this shirt because like she saw how like she bought me this hoodie, she saw how excited I got it, like the Royal Crackers thing, which is like one of my favorite stories about this show. But
I'm honored that we were your first. That's great. I love that. That's very, it makes me really happy.
But yeah, so season one is incredible, but also something I really like about season two is that you guys got crazier and more violent. And you also delved a lot into the side characters, because like when it starts off, it's mostly just like the family and Darby, and like the other characters in that boardroom aren't really like filled out yet. But by the end of season two, everyone in that boardroom has a story, and you know like who they are. And I think that's really, awesome. Really fun.
Great. Yeah, no, that was the ambition, is kind of just digging deeper into the psychology of our already established characters like Steve and Theo, and then putting some, for lack of a better term, meat on the bones of the, you know, less played characters and the background characters, you know, as much as we could. So great. I'm happy to hear that.
Also the guy who voices Darby, I'm blanking on his name right now.
David Bory.
Okay. He's the, Comedy Central announcer, and he has such a specific funny voice. I think Darby's probably my favorite character, just because he's like so good at like, his voice is just so good. And
he was the first cast of anybody.
Really?
Anybody. Yeah, yeah. Like, because when we were starting up the writer's room, the very first writer's room for Royal Crackers, like I was a little panicked about the fact that like nobody of starting a writer's room, like one of the advantages I have as a flash animator is like, why don't I take advantage of that and make something so that the writers aren't going in like completely blind as to like who these characters are, what they sound like to some degree.
Yeah.
And you know, Seth Cohen, executive producer on the show as well, has had a friendship relationship with David, and was like, this guy should play Darby. And I think he would do it. Like, he would loan you the time. But I think you should just cast him now. Like, so like the show wasn't even in its casting process yet. We were just starting to like write it. Mm-hmm. And he was already cast, cause I had animated this little thing. It was the pilot cold open. I animated that one, not that one that you see in the pilot, but a version of it. And he was voicing Darby already. I was voicing every other character.
So did you, have you done voice acting before?
Just on the aforementioned Fox show. That was it.
Oh, okay. Because like you voice Steve and you voice Theo Sr., right?
Yep.
Both like fantastic performances. Like it's that
Thank
kind of
you.
thing where you hear like a voice actor and you're like, what else have they been in? And it's like nothing, and you can't believe that, like, because your voice is like hilarious for both of them. It's so good.
Thank you.
I really like the how like Theo Senior does sound like Steve, but like more
Sure.
sinister because he's like so evil.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's funny because sometimes I'll see like comments or like whatever where people be like, you know, it's interesting that when Steve starts screaming or he gets maniacal, he sounds like Senior. I'm like, it's like a really brilliant touch, and I'm like, yeah, like yeah, totally. No, it's brilliant. Not that I'm a limited voice actor, like. I have a very, I don't have much range. Like there's only a handful of voices I could do.
It's a good voice, though.
But it works out. It definitely, like, I'm glad that it works in that way that, like, yes, Steve is a spitting image of his dad to some degree, mainly picked up kind of the ugly parts of his dad. Well, no, that's not true. He picked up most of the good things from his mom and a little bit of his dad, and I think that comes through just through circumstance of me doing both voices. That was just a happy accident, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. The Theo Senior stuff is some of like the I those episodes are the ones I see praised the most, and they are like fantastic episodes. So like, did you know going into the show that you wanted to do like all like a lot of these like flashback episodes to show what was going on with Theo Senior when he could like actually like talk?
So originally we were not going to have Senior be anything other than like a lump on like literally a prop in the show. That was our pitch to Adult Swim. And I was like ready to die on that hill, but I don't know. Something happened along the way of season one, writing season one, where we came to that Senior episode. And all I can really say about that is that, like, for the team, for the production team, like, we, I don't know what it was about that episode, but we were like fucking game mentality, like, let's make the greatest piece of television we can. That was our attitude. I said this the other day, like, you know, you can certainly debate whether we fell short of our ambitions or not, sure, but I'm telling you, like, we were like, we're gonna make something amazing with this episode. And that was like, you could feel it amongst everybody. And we were just highest ambition on that. And I think that was kind of like, that's the fun. That's the fun you need to chase of like any project is like, we are highly motivated and excited about this. Like, let's keep this going. So yeah, I mean, I definitely believe in the when we started the writer's room for the second season, I think I planted the flag of like episode the seniors the Catalina episode was, yeah, I think it ended up being, it's episode two currently, but it was gonna be the first episode of the season. And that was my initial plan, was like 1, 5, and 10 or something like that, like three senior. So I wanted to make essentially like this trilogy of like senior. And honestly, I like the thing of like, we're gonna be more violent, we're gonna be more crazy, that wasn't really conscious, but the consciousness of like, we are going to dig deeper into that world that we had so much fun doing in season one, like we're gonna go harder on that, and we're gonna really dive deep, and by circumstance and the darkness of that character and really making him this sociopathic, the sociopath is just like, it blended itself to all those crazy things.
That first senior episode, you're talking about wanting to make like a really good piece of television. You definitely
Yeah.
succeeded. And also because
Thank you.
when you like when a new because I love adult animation, and I also love when adult animation can be that serious and be that like truly engaging beyond just like a Family Guy thing, which is also why I love the Venture Brothers so much, because it does that constantly. But you
Me
never
too.
know going into a show when it's going to do that. And I remember the first senior episode, because like I already loved it just from like Burger Boy shit Blizzard and like everything. But that when that episode hit, I was like, oh, okay, so this is like this is going to be one of these shows. Like, that's when it really became, this is probably like my favorite like Adult Swim show right now, was like all the senior stuff, because when it you get to really delve into that kind of stuff and go beyond like just like the silliness, I think it gets like it's the exact, it's like catnip for my brain when shows do this.
I agree with that. Me too. I think it should have a point, you know, like in summation of it, you know. Not that, you know, I just like I just told you about like how much I love Family Guy, and I do. And like I, you know, Family Guy still to this day, I put it on and I fucking laugh. And
Oh yeah, same.
I have nothing against the show that just aims for that and that alone. But there's something for me that and maybe that's what it was about that episode that really like just threw us into overdrive, was just like, oh no, there's something very serious happening here and something serious to be explored. And I think also like I was so proud of the 10th episode of season one, the Craftopia. And that had such a heart to it that like I was kind of, even without having an audience reaction to that, I knew we had made something really special with that episode. And that I was a little high off of it. You know, I was like, we're going to continue this tone of like dark, heartfelt, has something to say. We're gonna lean on that in season two. Yeah.
I love the Craftopia episode. One of the questions that I got from someone in my Discord, they asked like, because Craftopia was partially focused on like online friendships and like online communities and stuff like that. And so someone wanted to know if you had any history with like joining those kind of like communities back in like the early days of the internet, or if you were like into like Minecraft and stuff like that.
Of course. Yeah, no, I started as there was a website called there was a piece of kids software in the 90s. It was released in 1995 called Microsoft Kids 3D Movie Maker. And I was 12 years old when I got it, and I started just animating on it, and it was the first thing like computer like used to make cartoon. Things move and voice, you could voice the characters. And it was the first version of that I'd ever seen. And I found the episode is partly, I was kind of like basing it on that. And there I've AOL days, went online, found a website that was like, send us your 3D Movie Maker movies and we'll host them. And I remember just like making a movie called, it was called Mall Riot, was the name of it. And it was literally just people like I would be fucking homeschooled immediately if I made it today. Like it was just people shooting each other in a shopping mall. It had no subtext or anything. It was just, you know, my parents didn't censor anything from me in terms of like violence, like sexual shit, of course, but like no violent anything. I watched the most violent shit ever. So I was just mirroring what I was watching. And so release as anyway, like one day I just remember like going online and checking that website and seeing like Mall Riot by Jason Ruiz on the website. And it was like, I'm fucking 12 years old. I'm like I was just like sorry, it's the audio, but like I was, my immediate reaction was fear of just like, what did I just do? And then I remember we had to go to my brother's baseball game. And that baseball game lasted an eternity to me. It was probably like 2 or 3 hours, but it felt like, I don't know how long it was, but it felt like fucking, because I'm like, I have a movie out right now and there's people like reviewing it right now. And I just remember getting home from that baseball game, running to the computer, turning it on, going to that website. And it was the guest book back then. It was called the guest book, is it was a bulletin board back then, or they're not even bulletin boards anymore. I don't know what the fuck you call it. Anyway, so but yeah, it was the guest book back then, and people were just one after another like, this is the greatest movie ever, Mall Riot by Jason, this is the best. And because it was other 12, 13-year-old kids saying this, but like, you know, who's, as a 12-year-old, whose opinion matters most to you? You know, it's other 12-year-olds, you know. So I was like, fuck everything in the world. I don't care about anything else, anything else. And this is everything to me. And it was true. Like my grades immediately plummeted. I failed. I repeated seventh grade. But I skipped eighth grade weirdly. So like I ended up graduating in my year
Yeah.
at age 18. But anyway, yeah, became a horrible student because I just did, I found my destiny essentially.
Yeah, you found what you wanted to do.
My purpose, totally. And it was all about that to a fault. I mean, then life, I neglect, you know, that's part of the story of Craftopia too, is like one could argue Matt's room and life around him is kind of in disarray because he's so focused on this little thing. That means so much to him, of course, but you know, it might be taking away from his quality of life outside of that. You know, that's me and my creative endeavors. It's like they have tunnel vision me for better and worse, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. Also, it's so funny. It's so awesome that you got the woman who voices Naruto to voice Matt. What's her name
Miley
again?
Flanagan. Miley
Yes.
Flanagan, yeah.
It's so awesome that like because it's such a good cast because like you and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting everybody's names. They're
It's
the
okay.
guy who plays Theo Jr.
Andrew Santino.
Yes, you guys are both just like incredible. And then you also just have like so many great like actors in there. Like the you have Darby, you have Matt, and you have Jessica St. Clair as Deb. And Jessica St. Clair is in Review on Comedy Central. Did you ever watch that show?
I never watched it, no, but I'm a big fan of everybody involved.
It's insane. It's an insane, like it's very similar to like of that live action era of Adult Swim, but it's like on Comedy Central. And I remember like watching like Review recently, and I was like, oh shit, that's Deb. Like it's Deb in Review.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
Yeah.
she the like she was kind of, I think she might have been the last of the main cast that was cast. I think she might have been the last person. And she's like the last piece of the puzzle. And I just remember like being kind of like, we don't really know what to do with Deb, or like, you know, when it comes to a Deb line, we didn't really know what to write there. And when, as soon as we cast Jessica, once we found her and immediately cast her, like writing for her, just like it was night and day. It was like overnight, just 1,000 times easier. And we had a defined character almost overnight. It was really incredible what she brought to that character, the
Yeah.
clarity she brought to it.
Did you kind of like base any part of her on like Peggy Hill from King of the Hill? I feel like there's like some shades of Peggy in there.
No, but I have heard that. You know, like I was not a I'm gonna rewatch all of King of the Hill soon because I was not a fan as a kid. I was like,
Yeah.
what is this? This is so boring and nothing is happening. And you know, but my partner Chloe, it's one of her favorites, and she'll put it on sometimes, and I'll watch, and I'm like, this might be my favorite animated cartoon ever made. As an
Yeah.
adult now, it's so filled with heart. You could tell that every episode they gave it the thought, you know, that it
Yeah.
deserved, and the care that it deserved. The characters are so rich, and you care about them, and you know, I can speak from personal experience now, like that's all that matters, is like that trend that comes on the screen when your team and everyone cares about these characters and the stories you're telling with them and protecting them and making
Yeah.
sure their integrity is protected. It
Yeah.
makes for just a great show. And King of the Hill is definitely one of those that I'm like, I gotta rewatch now, because I fell into the same trap as everyone else. Like I was judging it off of very shallow, you know, it's not my fault as a kid,
Yeah.
but yeah, no, I'm excited to rewatch the whole thing.
Yeah, because I always got like Deb always kind of felt like she's very different from Peggy, but there's a lot of lines that feel like a Peggy Hill line like turned up to 11 because you guys can
Sure.
do a lot of stuff on World Crackers that they just like couldn't do on King of the Hill because of like the limitations of like that world and that universe. But that's another thing with this show that I love is that it starts off so like unassuming where you think it's going to be like just a show about like a cracker company and then like Factory 37 happens and then you guys introduce like the Ootsie Wootsies in like season two. Are they in season one or are they just in season two?
They're just in season two. They're
Okay.
in a one of the shots in the opening title sequence.
Okay.
But that's all we had at that point. And I was like, what if we lean into that? Yeah, it was just an image.
Yeah.
And we made like a storyline about them.
Yeah, because all that stuff, like, you guys do go like super, super far into that like crazy Adult Swim territory, which I feel like maybe a lot of people weren't expecting when the show came out, because it does seem like it's going to be like in the, because it also does, you, I think you said once on an interview that you wanted to kind of make it look like Beavis and Butthead. Is that,
Yeah, a
am I
little bit. Yeah,
misremembering that?
sure. I love Mike Judge. Yeah.
Because it does kind of almost look like a kind of King of the Hill like type show, where it's like, you
Sure.
know, very down to earth, but then you do put in like so much of that like Adult Swim like secret ingredient to it that makes it go like absolutely crazy. But yeah, also, so the season.
I wish I could say that that was like a master plan. It wasn't. It was us trying to figure out what the show was.
Yeah.
And if I'm being blatantly honest, like brutally honest, like even after we did Factory 37, like we didn't quite, 'cause it felt like Factory 37 was like a treehouse of horrors where we were just like leaning into, like intentionally leaning into a horror genre. I'll
Yeah.
tell you that a big one for us was the 0.1%, the yacht episode.
Yeah.
That was the one where we kind of like, writing became a different monster for us. It became like, how do we do so, like something with that level of stakes every episode where it's life and death, but still very silly. And you know, also like we weren't sure how to make the Hornsbys a family that you wanted to root for. Like, you know, they're not the biggest victims in the world, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they're all right, like they're like financially, and
Yeah.
they're kind of shitty people, especially to Matt sometimes. So like we were kind of like, how do you root for these people? And that kind of showed us like, A, that like the forces the above them that will not let them into their little club are the enemy. The people
Yeah.
that hang that above them are the enemy for them. And that their own ambitions and aspirations are their own enemy, like are their enemy, like they are driven to be part of that club that they are not wanted in. And I
Yeah.
think everyone kind of knows what that feeling is like, you know.
Were you, speaking of that episode, were you pissed off when you found out that they were changing HBO Max to just Max?
I was just like, okay, whatever. Like, I don't know. I was more in kind of like just the same way as Joe Schmo off the street would feel. It was just like, what? Okay, I was gonna still call it HBO Max either way. Like, I
Yeah.
was like, I think we did adjust one. I think there's a HBO Max. Oh yeah, and in Bedai in the second season where he says Max instead of HBO Max. I was like, why don't we just keep calling it HBO Max? That would be so funny. I kind of wish we did, but
Yeah,
hey man,
because
sometimes you got to play ball around here.
I think those episodes, like the 1% episode, came out like right around the time when they made the change, and it added like
Yeah.
another layer of the joke. Like it added
Yeah.
like another layer because it came out like right around
Totally.
the time. So speaking of this, so do you get annoyed when people compare the show to Succession?
No, because we did that to ourselves. I mean, I went in knowing full, I went in pitching the show, knowing full well the comparison to Succession. I might have even opened the pitch with like if you've seen the show Succession, blah, blah, blah. So I did that myself. I like, or Seth and I did that, I should say. Like, I don't hold in it, but you know, it was mainly just a way to package something that was presentable and gettable right away, and something that like, well, like you have something to compare it to, so it's not completely left to the imagination what this is.
Yeah.
But you know, once the writing process of the show started, it was like, let's make the show we want to make.
Yeah,
Like,
and
we don't have to be anything.
the show's also like not about the same thing Succession is about too.
No.
Like, there, no one's ever really fighting over control of the company or anything like that. And there's also no clear, like, nobody is, oh, this is the Kendall character. Like, this is the Shiv character. Like, nobody lines up with like a counterpart in Succession. But I do feel like that's a thing that a lot of people say. And
And that,
also,
by the
you're
way,
kind of.
I think is part of what hurt the initial reception, is that people felt like it was, and maybe it was to some degree. I'm fine with that. Like I'm confident enough to admit that it was like opportunistic, that Adult Swim was just like falling into traps that other networks had, and we're not only doing another like basic like fucking adult animated show, but it was a Succession spoof. Like, oh my god, like I get it, you know, but I don't know. Sorry, I lost my train of thought and I cut you off. I apologize.
You're good. Because I remember the first season is airing right around the same time as like the final season of Succession. So I wonder if you guys got any like viewership boosts from that. Like someone wanting to like calm down after like an episode from that last season of Succession and put on like Royal Crackers.
I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but like I have no fucking clue because Max does not, we don't have any numbers. We don't get to see any of that shit. The data, it's all kept away from us.
Well, when you guys came back this year, I saw a lot of articles like saying that you guys were like the number one new show on Adult Swim last year or something like that. I've been seeing a lot of those. I think you guys got a full season. I'm Minswimpedia, so we track this shit for like absolutely no reason. But you guys got like a full season marathon, and usually they only do like they'll air like five episodes, but they aired your full second season, I think, which is the only time they've done that in a while for a show that wasn't Rick and Morty.
Adult Swim has been awesome and they have really backed us. They've really gone to bat. The unfortunate thing right now is that they are fighting. I don't want to put words in their mouths, but you
Anything I
know,
can edit out, so.
there's just overlords now that they
Of
have to
course.
answer to. And
Yes.
maybe that always existed, but I feel like it's amplified to the nth degree now. So it's you know, it's not their fault, any of it. It's just this new landscape of television is just like nobody really knows how to navigate it, and it's pretty universally felt everywhere. And nobody is not like somewhat of a victim of it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, both seasons right now on Max or HBO Max. If you're listening to this, go watch Royal
Please,
Crackers.
like now, because like we are like this is where the decisions are made and the survival of the show hangs in the balance, you know. And I can speak for the whole team when I say we love the show very, very much. We put a lot of care and thought into everything. You know, it is not some conveyor belt show. Like
Absolutely not,
it
no.
takes a lot out of us to make this show. And yeah, that's a thank you for saying that. Like, yes, like we need it now. Like if you want to watch the show, watch it now, please. I implore anybody who hasn't seen it yet. And
Yeah,
if you have seen it,
definitely.
rewatch it.
I do have a question for you guys. This is also like kind of related to this. Would you guys ever do like a DVD of Royal Crackers if you got the opportunity?
Sure, I would love that. Yeah, I'm
Because
down for everything. Yeah.
like William Street DVD was like such a huge like thing for me because they really did like invent like how to do like TV on DVD right. And I also just want to own every single show that I like forever so nobody can take it away from me. So I really want more Adult Swim stuff, especially like this to be on like a DVD, you
By
know?
the way, like you're smart for doing that, and it's totally reasonable to do that at this point. Like, yeah,
Exactly.
given, yeah. I applaud you for that. Like, that's great. And yeah, 100%. I would absolutely love to, like, I would love to design it and all that shit. Like, that would be so fun. I would love that.
Would you guys ever do like commentaries?
Yeah, of course. I would do it as Steve. That would be really fun. Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. Totally.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, that's pretty much
I miss director commentaries. I really,
right?
I know they still kind of exist somewhere in the ether, but like, I really miss that part of my life is like watching a great movie and watching the audio commentary all the way through, and I miss that.
Yeah. The Venture Brothers, when they had their movie last year, they did a commentary which is just them like fucking around, which is like their normal commentary. Then they did a commentary that's just like the entire length of the movie of them answering questions like that fans sent in and like talking about the show. Like they had two commentaries
That's
on
so
that
cool.
movie. And it's
That's
like
a great, yeah.
I miss having this for like TV shows, or like when Futurama came back, it's the only season of Futurama without commentaries now because they just don't make this kind of shit anymore. But
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, listen, it's all money. It's all just, is it profitable? That's just the question. And if there's an incentive to do it monetarily, they'll do it. If there's not, there's just not. And it's a harder hill to climb. And that's just, that's a statement about America. It's not a statement about
Absolutely, yeah.
any one entity. But yeah, like it I don't know. Yeah, I've thought about that. Like, I wonder where I do think there's a market for like audio commentaries and stuff. It's just like, where do we put it, and how do we
Yeah.
do it in a way that is financially, like, there's an incentive to do it.
Yeah. All right, I have that's pretty much all the questions I have. So you can follow me on Twitter at MouseFitzGerald without the D. Also to follow the podcast account at OwlsOnlyPod. I've not updated it in like a lot of months. I'm gonna actually update it tonight because I've been plugging it on here. You can follow my Instagram, adult underscore swim underscore merch underscore archive. I post like all my like Adult Swim shit that I spend all my money on there. And you want to do any plugs?
Just it pl well please watch Royal Crackers on Max ASAP because we need it. And also if you are a fan of the show, come join our subreddit. It's just subreddit Royal Crackers, one word. And yeah, and my Instagram is my name backwards. So I think that's all I got.
All right. We'll see you guys next
And
month.
rewatch, sorry, rewatch King of the Hill with me too. Like
Yes,
I'm gonna do that,
absolutely.
so join me.